What's up, everybody? Welcome to the 2QB Experience. This is episode 3, the Geno Smith Experience. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Joshua Lake. How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing well. I'm surviving the monsoon weather down here in Texas, but haven't floated away yet, so glad to be here.
Yeah, hang on to something. Don't let those tides carry you away. Also joining us this week, special guest, Anthony Amico of 2QBs.com and a couple other places. How you doing, Anthony?
Doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Yeah, no problem. It's good to have you. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself real quick before we dive into the news?
Pretty much, I'm just a huge fantasy football head. I've been writing on RotoViz for about a year now. Also contributor over at Fantasy Insiders. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Amixta. And, you know, Sal and the rest of the crew were nice enough to ask me to be a part of 2QBs.com. And it's been great. I've been loving it.
Yeah, we love having you, and we'll talk a little bit more about your work for the site a little bit later, but I want to start off with just some news. We're recording on Wednesday, March 9th. This is the day that NFL free agency really kicks into gear, and there have been a lot of signings already, and while we're not going to cover everything, I do want to cover the two more notable quarterback moves that have come up today, and the first of which is Chase Daniel signing with the Eagles. What does that mean for him? What does that mean for Sam Bradford? Do you guys have any thoughts? How about you, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Eagles are doing a pretty good job here just creating some competition. Chase Daniel obviously has experience in Doug Peterson's system from their time together in Kansas City. And Daniel's kind of a guy I've always really liked. He's obviously really small, but was really productive in college, backed up Drew Brees for a long time. He's played behind some really good quarterbacks. And we've kind of had over the last couple of years our Chase Daniel experience, like week 17, I feel like every year. And he's played pretty well. So I think he'll definitely put a little bit of pressure on Bradford. This might be what he needs. Bradford, that is, to kind of become a quality starter. I don't really think there's a doubt of who's going to start considering the money. But it's definitely a good move, I think, by Philly to bring him in.
What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I think Anthony's point about the Peterson connection is interesting, just that Peterson's bringing in a guy that he knows a little bit. The Drew Brees comp is interesting. They're both 6 foot, kind of smaller, lighter dudes. But it'll be interesting to see. The money suggests that Bradford is probably the starter, but it's a fairly substantial deal, it looks like, for a backup. So I think it will push him. Maybe as it turns out that Daniel kind of comes alongside Bradford and helps him understand the offense more quickly, and that's kind of the idea. But Daniel's an interesting guy, and we know Bradford not being the healthiest of guys. It could be that Daniel gets some legitimate playing time either this season or soon.
Yeah, my other concern is that we've seen the Eagles really cut bait with a lot of Chip Kelly's guys and the moves that Chip Kelly made. And Sam Bradford was one of those moves over the Chip Kelly tenure. And if they're bringing in Chase Daniel, I think they're bringing him in to compete. I would not be surprised if he does become the starter sooner rather than later. I agree with Anthony that Bradford has probably got to be the favorite just based on his contract. But I don't know. I could see a week one Chase Daniel start if maybe Bradford can't stay fully healthy through the preseason, or if Daniel really impresses in the preseason. It'll be interesting to see what happens. We're just going to have to follow it and try to keep pace. The other notable news today, quarterback-wise, was Osweiler did not re-sign with the Broncos, signed with the Texans. Josh, what do you think about this one?
I saw that Jeff Miller on Twitter, he's one of Dynasty League Football's writers, he's a sometime contributor for us at 2QBs. He had a really good take that I think fits with how I view Dynasty, that I think Brock Osweiler is probably a really scary QB2 for you, just because I don't know how reliable he's going to be. I really like that kind of dependable, sometimes boring veteran as a QB2 option, just because you know you can plug him in every week. But Osweiler is a very intriguing, like, third quarterback that maybe if you can kind of sit him for a few weeks and see how he plays. We've seen the last 2 years with both Hoyer and Fitzpatrick that you don't have to be that good when you're throwing to DeAndre Hopkins. The fantasy points will follow. But I would rather not have to kind of throw him out in the first couple of weeks just till we see what he looks like in the new offense.
Yeah, he's definitely a QB3 candidate, I think, off the bat. But that doesn't mean he couldn't be a QB2 at some point. I am curious to see what this does for DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, he's still, you know, a first or second round pick. But I have to think that Osweiler is an upgrade over Brian Hoyer. What do you think, Anthony?
I'm really torn because I don't think Osweiler is that good. I mean, we have to remember that he was you know, bad enough that they could bench him for Peyton Manning after we saw the bad Peyton Manning. So I'm not really sure if Osweiler is really anything worth talking about in terms of like his actual, you know, football talent. But, you know, O'Brien is one of the QB whisperers, I think, in football right now. He can make a lot with a little. So when you consider the weapons and the, you know, the coaching, I think that Osweiler could string together some usable weeks. Like you said, QB3, he's probably a matchups play. And again, he's the guy that's obviously going to be locked in to start, which I think in 2QB is just really valuable because at least you know that, you know, outside of injury, he's probably going to suit up and start for Houston.
Yeah, that's his job from the get-go based upon this contract. And that safety is crucial in two quarterback leagues. It also is worth noting that the Texans also signed Lamar Miller today. And I think that that does boost Osweiler's value, if only because he is pretty good receiving out of the backfield. Anyway, those are the two major moves today that we need to touch on. With that said, I want to move on to some recent work at 2QBs.com, the first of which isn't necessarily on the site. Well, I mean, it is, but these are a set of Twitter polls that we've been running to kind of flesh out where our readers and where our followers stand on certain quarterbacks. So the first poll we put up was Cam Newton versus Andrew Luck, and Cam Newton won that one. So he is going to be the number one QB for these rankings. And then after that, we put Luck against Aaron Rodgers. Luck won that one. So Luck slots in at number two. We're going to do this all the way down from, you know, QB1 down to QB32, or maybe even a little deeper, because we want to know what you guys think. And we're posting these rankings alongside our own on the site, on the rankings page. And it's going to become a part of our staff composite rankings that we all work on. And so definitely give us a follow on Twitter at 2QBs. Check that out. I wanted to note, or at least prompt Josh with a question here, because he's been pretty involved in these. Have there been any big surprises to you? I know that Drew Brees lost a couple of Twitter polls that were a little surprising.
Yeah, man, Drew Brees lost three in a row. He's just kind of the forgotten kid this year is what it looks like to me. He lost handily to Tom Brady. And they got just demolished by Ben Roethlisberger. 91% of voters would take Ben Roethlisberger over Drew Brees. Like, that Pittsburgh hype is real. And then the one that was surprising, because I think those first two are, you can see that. There's people that like Brady, there's people that like Roethlisberger, but then he lost to Carson Palmer after that. And that was just astounding to me that when you have Drew Brees, who has been ultra consistent at an elite level for a decade, loses to Carson Palmer, that I like, but I liked him. I tweeted this out. I liked him a lot better when you were getting him off the waiver wire in one quarterback leagues than now where you're taking him over Drew Brees. Like, that's astounding to me that he lost that one.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. I definitely have Drew Brees ranked higher, but I do agree with the followers on Roethlisberger. I think part of it has to do with perceived safety. Maybe I'm crazy.
Yeah, I think that Pittsburgh offense has a lot of potential this year. The thing that worries me is that Roethlisberger has not had the best floor recently, that he's had some bad weeks, and that, to me, I just see that Brees is such a reliable guy, that he is consistently elite both weekly and then also season long. Roethlisberger, I think, is a pretty safe candidate to have good points per game and to have a good season, but he has those down weeks that worry me. That said, he obviously has the better weapons around him, and it's not even close compared to the Saints this year.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to add another weapon with Ladarius Green as well. That's pretty interesting with Heath Miller retiring. Doesn't help Jesse James's dynasty stock at all, but I am very excited to watch that Pittsburgh offense going forward. Anthony, you want to chip in anything on these QB polls before we move on?
No, I mean, I just think it's been fun. I think it's good. I like that we're doing the readers alongside our composites. I think it gives us a nice little barometer. And it kind of gives our readers a good opportunity to see not only like where do we rank players, but where is that relative to the market?
Yeah, I think it's good to see those alongside each other. And it's good to have the readers and followers' voices be heard, I think, in terms of these rankings, because that perception is valuable to us as analysts to know when we rank these guys, are we going against the grain? Are we, you know, reinforcing what the public believes? All that fun stuff. The next piece I want to comment on is one of my own, you know, shameless self-promotion here. I did a recap of a mock draft that all three of us participated in. This was a 10-team mock where each of us took two picks in the 10-team. There were five of us drafting. And I kind of wanted to jump in, get your guys' thoughts, because mine are all in the article. You can check those out if you want to read them. But what did you guys think about the results of this mock? Were there strategies that you were impressed by, or was there new stuff you tried that worked better or worse than maybe you thought it would? Anthony, why don't you start?
Well, I mean, for one, I think I definitely went way too high on Mariota. I took him in the third round. He was, I want to say, the fifth or sixth quarterback off the board. I mean, I was at the time, especially, it was like right after the season. All I could think about was how good I think Mariota is going to be in 2016. And I just like lost all concept of like I took him before Ben Roethlisberger. Like, that's just not smart.
It's the mock draft equivalent of a hot take.
Oh, yeah. And it is interesting, though, when you do a mock. We did this off, like on a Google Doc, a Google Sheet, not off like a list, like on My Fantasy League or something like that. And it's always interesting to see those results because, you know, some guys do fall through the cracks. I mean, I think we had a bunch of guys that went a little later than they probably would have otherwise. So from that standpoint, especially, I thought it was really interesting. We got really kind of like a true feeling of what we thought about players at the time.
Yeah, it's fun because everybody's drafting off of their own lists of their own. They're pulling their rankings information from different spots. Like, I know I have my own rankings. You guys have your own. And when that's happening and nobody and not everyone is using some, you know, generic ADP list on Yahoo, ESPN, My Fantasy League, whatever, you get some of those kind of outlandish picks, guys that seem to go higher than you perceive them to be. Whereas, you know, on someone else's rankings sheet or wherever they're pulling that information from, they have that guy ranked higher. Josh, what do you think about this mock?
Yeah, I think all the points you guys are making are good. That for me, at least, just the experience of going through it without any sort of preset rankings was really helpful. Just to have to think through on a blank slate, who do I want to take where? And I kind of experimented a little. I took Cam Newton at the 101, which I'm not convinced that that's where I'll be going. I actually bumped him down a little bit in my own rankings since then, but I wanted to see what it looked like. And so there was a little experimenting, kind of see what teams look like. And it's up on the site so people can see the full teams. But I have to say, looking at it, Greg, you've got one of the strongest teams waiting until the sixth and seventh round to take your quarterback. You got Dalton and Rivers really late, and the team just looks so strong. And I'm a big fan of Dalton and Rivers. I think they're in for good years. They're being underdrafted, and that's another topic. But I really like the way the teams look where they wait on quarterback. I just, as everyone has said, it's such a deep position now that I'd rather load up on the skill position guys. And I think that we see that in these mock draft teams, that the teams that waited on quarterback have really set themselves up in good position. And I, obviously, at this point, we're so many months from the season's kickoff that who knows what it'll look like. But I would expect that kind of late round quarterback trend holds true for two quarterback leagues come this summer.
Yeah, that was one of my big takeaways as well. I think the teams that I like the most, the one I drafted, I mean, I drafted it, so I know I like it. But Sal's number nine pick team was kind of the consensus, or not the consensus, but the majority favorite among the other analysts. And that's another one where he waited until the sixth round to take a QB. And that meant that he got to take Allen Robinson, Dez Bryant, Devontae Freeman, Martavis Bryant, Doug Martin, like all these guys back to back in the first five rounds. And that just seems silly to me, like to get all that talent at those positions. I am curious to see how these running backs start to move up the rankings, because I'm convinced they will. Like, I really don't think there's any way that Devontae Freeman is really going to last into the third round. Doug Martin last into the fifth round. Eddie Lacy in the fifth round. Like, that was the one part of this mock that I thought was a little suspect. I don't think that this is indicative of how our drafts are going to look in August and July. But again, that's kind of a topic for a different time. The next piece I want to talk about is one that Sal wrote about Joe Flacco. I'm not going to go in deep on it, but go check that out. It's a nice defense of Joe Flacco, and I did want to get your guys' thoughts on Flacco in general. Do you think he's being properly valued? Do you think he's being, you know, under or overvalued? Just for reference, he went with the last pick of the eighth round in our draft, and that was actually as a QB3. Does that seem reasonable to you guys?
I would say I think he probably deserves to go a little bit earlier than that. It's so hard to say with there's so many quarterbacks. I mean, we took like 20, 21 quarterbacks in this draft, and they were still a couple guys that I think I would start in a given week. I mean, Matt Ryan didn't even get drafted. But I think that Flacco's value is pretty good. I mean, it's not starter level, but it's definitely streamable level in one QB and in two quarterback leagues. I think you definitely should be willing to start him. Baltimore led the league in pass attempts last season. I am still firmly team Trestman. And I think that their weapons, while they are probably, you know, losing a little bit off the top, they signed Ben Watson. They have, Perryman coming back from injury, and they might even draft a guy in the first or second round. I think that this pass offense could definitely come together. And obviously their running backs are very good at catching passes.
Yeah. The thing that's insane to me, and granted, this is not perfect ADP for our purposes, but if we look at my fantasy leagues data, and I say it's not perfect because they're typically one quarterback leagues they're talking about. We're talking about two quarterback. But Joe Flacco is the 26th quarterback off the board. He's going after Alex Smith, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff. The players going ahead of him, just I don't see it. I mean, Joe Flacco is he's pretty consistent in who he's been. There's some arguments. I know 14-team mocker on Twitter really is hyping the fact that Flacco's start to his career looks a lot like Ben Roethlisberger's, so maybe there's more upside. I'm not on board with that yet. But Joe Flacco, we know he's going to finish as kind of a QB 15, QB 18 kind of guy. And if his weapons around him really hit, if Perryman turns into who some people think he is, if Steve Smith comes back healthy, and if Trestman really elevates the team, there's reason to see upside. It's not just that he's this really boring, bland kind of, you just plug him in and you know you'll get 12 points. I mean, that's what Alex Smith is. And I really don't understand why you would take two guys that are pretty similar as far as reliability and go with the guy with low upside over Joe Flacco, who at least there's some reason to think maybe he takes a step forward. So I'd say he's undervalued. I'm not selling him as some top 10 guy, but I do think there's room for value on where you can take him right now.
I agree that he probably has more upside than a guy like Alex Smith, but I don't necessarily agree that he's that much better, kind of overall over the course of a season. They kind of have finished in similar ways over the past few years in terms of points per game. And I know that's not a perfect measure of, usability in fantasy, but I think you, all three of you, the two of you and Sal, are all a little bit higher on Joe Flacco than I am, but I've never really liked him. And part of that does have to do with, the weapons there. But part of it, I think, is just him. I do kind of find him to be somewhat boring. He's like a, I don't know, he just seems like a league average fantasy quarterback to me, even if he might be better than that in, real football perception. Any more thoughts on Joe? I kind of just called you guys out. I don't want to do that and then move on to the next topic. Do you guys see where I'm coming from? Do you disagree? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm on board with that. While I think there's some reason to hope, I am not convinced he's this high upside guy. I do think he's just, his value to me is in that, like I was saying earlier, the reliable QB2, you plug him in, hopefully you have a QB3 with more upside behind him, so maybe Flacco gets overtaken on your roster. But I really like the value in it. He's going to start. You know what he is, and you can plug him in any week and feel pretty okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a quarterback that's still never thrown for 1,000 yards in a season, which is pretty remarkable considering the era of passing that we're in. But I think that I agree with Josh in the sense that you're getting him at QB3 value, and he's probably a really solid QB2.
Yeah, I see him more as a low-end QB2. I just kind of consider him in that QB15 to QB20 range, and I don't know. I feel pretty convinced about that. But anyway, let's move on. The next set of articles I want to talk to are yours, Anthony, and these are the Armchair Scouting Reports. You've done a ton of awesome work on all these rookie quarterbacks, Jared Goff, Hackenberg, Wentz, Lynch, Dak Prescott, Connor Cook, and Cardale Jones so far. I don't need you to rehash everything that you've written up in these articles, but I want a little bit of insight into your process. How do you do this? When you sit down to watch this tape, are you watching for specific matchups? Are you watching for footwork? What are you doing here in this series?
Well, first of all, just thank you for the praise on the series. It's been a lot of fun. The kind of things that I look for, when I go to watch, especially since the videos that we have on Draft Breakdown are are usually at least somewhat limited, is I look at the quarterback schedule. I look at his performance over the year on paper, and I try to just kind of figure out first, like, you know, at least statistically, like, what was this quarterback's best game? What was his worst game and game, like, somewhere in the middle? And I kind of try to watch at least those three to start. And I really want to see, what does this guy look like when he's playing at his best? When he's playing his worst, is he doing a lot of the things right that he's doing well when he is being successful, but maybe a couple things aren't breaking his way? And, you know, kind of what is the average outcome from this quarterback? Is he someone that we can rely on? Does he have, you know, is he going to be up and down? Is he going to be pretty much straight line, you know, through? And what's his upside? So, I mean, those are the kinds of things I'm looking at on film. The mechanical things, I'm not really a total expert on, but I like to look at them because, you know, I think sometimes mechanical flaws can lead to poor timing, stuff like that. But we also have seen, you know, guys like Philip Rivers succeed with what I think has been historically poor mechanics. So I don't think it really matters as much, stuff like that. And that's really just the film aspect. I think past that, I like looking at the numbers. I like seeing especially adjusted yards per attempt. I really like adjusted yards per attempt to be over 9 in a final season. I think that's been pretty predictive out of what we have, you know, for quarterback data. The position has just been so hard to evaluate, obviously for pro teams, but especially for the fantasy community and kind of the not so plugged in community, because probably the biggest thing that we can learn about quarterbacks is happening behind closed doors in interviews, just finding out kind of what these guys' makeup is. And it's our job as prognosticators to kind of read into what we're seeing on the field and see if we can determine some of that stuff in advance.
Yeah. That's another thing I wanted to ask you about, was how do you feel like you can view those things when you are watching film or you're looking at numbers, those, you know, intangible qualities, leadership and so on. Do you feel like you can get a sense of that as you're watching these guys play?
I would say it's definitely a case by case situation. I mean, you definitely want to see guys, especially the guys who run, like you want to see them finish runs. You want to see them get up after taking big hits. And I think that toughness in general is something that you can quantify at least a little bit with these quarterbacks in terms of, you know, if they're hanging into the pocket to deliver throws. Are they guys who, after they make a mistake, that they come back and they do a couple things really well, or do they make another mistake? And those are kind of the things that I look at least to give just a little bit of insight into these guys' mental makeup, because I think that stuff is probably the most important for quarterbacks.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and that's why I asked about it. Are there any of these particular rookies you've looked at so far that stand out in that way in terms of those intangibles?
I mean, I love Dak Prescott. I think I hope I'm the highest person out there on him, because I think that he is just – I think he's going to be pretty good. I don't know if he's going to be starter level, you know, over a long period of time, but, you know, he's a guy that played for pretty poor SEC teams. I mean, he's facing – you know, the Alabamas of the world every single year and losing, but putting up good fights, you know, finishing tough runs, not really willing to take his foot off the gas. That's a guy that I like a lot from an intangible perspective. And the other guy is probably Carson Wentz. It's hard to see a lot of the stuff on tape with Wentz in the sense that he's, you know, a 1AA quarterback. But the one thing that really stood out for me is that even when pass protection broke down, which I thought was pretty often, he stood in there and made tough throws. I mean, this guy got knocked around, I thought, a lot at North Dakota State for a team that won 5 straight national championships, and it didn't really seem to faze him. He was willing to make tough throws. He was willing to let his teammates make plays, and those are the kinds of things that I think a lot of college quarterbacks don't want to do because they're afraid to make mistakes and have those mistakes on film. And I don't think Wentz has those qualities. I think he's willing to not to take shots and let his players make plays.
Yeah, and I'm assuming you've probably had to answer this question a couple times already, either on your podcast or otherwise, but if you were the Cleveland Browns right now with that number 2 pick and you were going to take a QB, which from this class would you select?
I would definitely take Wentz, and I think that probably is ultimately what they're going to end up doing. I think he's the best quarterback in the class. I'm not really a big fan on Goff. I think Goff is like your really safe pick, but I don't really think that he has upside. I think he's more of like an Alex Smith kind of a player. And I think that if you're Cleveland, like the one thing that you haven't had for a long time is a quarterback. And the one thing that can save you as a franchise is to hopefully get a good one. And I think that Wentz has more upside than a guy like Goff. And beyond that, I think he just fits our new system really well. Hugh Jackson's a guy that loves to push the ball down the field vertically. They're hopefully getting Josh Gordon back this season. This is a team that can definitely push the ball down the field. And I think that Wentz has the kind of arm and the kind of decisiveness that you want to see in a guy to push the ball vertically and do the kind of things Hugh Jackson wants to.
The only other thing I wanted to talk to you about from this sort of analysis you've been doing is in regards to non-quarterbacks. As you're watching these guys, you know, throw a ton of passes and move around in the pocket, make runs and all the stuff that quarterbacks do, are there any non-quarterbacks that have stood out to you on the tape, in the numbers you're seeing, that have played alongside these guys that, you've been impressed by or, discouraged by who might show up in the draft?
The guy that's really discouraged me, and maybe I'm biased because I haven't really understood throughout the draft process, but Michael Thomas at Ohio State, when I was watching Cardale Jones, I was like, you know, let's see if this guy jumps off the screen at all. And he was basically invisible. I mean, I know that he made plays obviously throughout the year, but I would have really expected him to kind of jump out and be, you know, a focal point or to be a big playmaker. And I thought that a lot of his plays when he made them were on, you know, easy throws by Cardale Jones, like, you know, a broken coverage, something like that. And, I think overall I was just really, I thought it was really interesting. I guess I can't really put another adjective on it. Just how few weapons a lot of these guys have. I mean, you look at the quarterback, Jared Goff, you know, bless his heart, man. Like that guy had, I thought no one throw to this year. Like the first thing I saw when I'm watching Jared Goff is like, these guys can catch. Like they're dropping passes all over the place. You know, Hackenberg hasn't played with a good wide receiver since Allen Robinson left. Wentz is playing with 1AA guys. Paxton Lynch is playing with Memphis guys. You know, Prescott's best wide receiver ran a 4.9 at the combine. Like, I mean, the options and the weapons that these guys have had like, overall has been pretty bad, which I guess you have to take almost as a plus. For some of them, just because, you know, you look at what some of the historical quarterbacks have had, you know, Johnny Manziel had Mike Evans, Teddy Bridgewater had Devontae Parker. I mean, a lot of times when you see a quarterback go in the first round, he usually has at least one weapon that goes also fairly early. And I just don't know if that's going to be the case this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is one of the factors that has a lot of, you know, draft experts still projecting Goff as, you know, that top QB is because he didn't play with anybody. And they're expecting that, you know, if he does go to an NFL team with real receivers, that he might be able to outperform a guy like Wentz. But I have a feeling that more of the reason why Goff is, I think, generally perceived above Wentz in rankings has to do with the fact that he's a little more NFL ready. And like you said, that's not necessarily something that you want from, you know, someone you have to take with the first or second overall pick. You want somebody who's going to be a franchise guy for a long time into the future, not necessarily somebody who's just going to get you by for the next, you know, 2 to 4 years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I've had these conversations with you, Josh, a few times, like about just how I value the quarterback position. But, you know, the best way to be a great team for a long period of time is to have a great quarterback. And if you're not trying to get a great quarterback, you should be trying to, you know, plug in with cheaper guys, veterans, lower draft picks. I don't really think that you should be taking a guy in the first round that you don't think can be one of the, you know, 5 or 7 best quarterbacks in football.
Yeah, no, I think it's the right point, but I don't think it's the way that NFL teams are approaching it. And like you've said, and we've talked about that, there's just such strange incentives with all these decision makers that are trying to hold on to their jobs. So they're looking at wins now. But I think you're right that it really what you should be doing is taking swings. And like you have said, is just throw draft picks out there, take 2 quarterbacks, take many quarterbacks, just keep trying to find the guy. Because like you said, the successful franchises, the ones that last over time are the ones that find that guy. And there's so many mediocre free agent options that you could just kind of pick up for cheap that what's the point of spending a really early pick on a guy that's just going to be among that crowd in a couple of years.
Yeah, well, anyway, altogether, real good stuff. You guys should definitely check out Anthony's work at 2QBs. Thanks again for contributing that stuff, Anthony. It's awesome. I know you said you appreciated the praise, but it's well-deserved because you've really knocked it out of the park with that stuff. I want to move on now to what we're calling our main topic. It's kind of a silly one, and this came up on Twitter. I think, Anthony, you were the one who initiated it. You gave your quarterback Mount Rushmore, your top four guys. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it seemed to kind of just be like popping around on Twitter. Obviously, it was, you know, Peyton Manning retires. Everyone's talking about legacy. You know, who's your top quarterback, all this stuff. And I always like putting it to something I already understand. So Mount Rushmore it is, you know?
Yeah. So what we're going to do here is a few different things. We're going to start by giving our own Mount Rushmores for quarterbacks all time. Before we get into our picks, though, I want to talk a little bit about methodology. How are you coming up with these four that you choose? Because there are a lot of really good options. I mean, there are probably 5 to 10 guys who all have arguments to be on that Mount Rushmore. It's like, what do you care about? Like, do you want like pioneers of the position? Do you want to make sure that multiple eras are represented? Because, you know, comparing the 2000s to, you know, the 1970s isn't really fair in terms of how the game is played. But Josh, why don't you start? You've been kind of left out for a little while here. When you're thinking about your Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks, what's important to you? What are you trying to represent with your choices?
Yeah, so for me, I have to admit right up front that I don't have – so I've watched football since the early 90s. Like, I have very fond memories of decades ago when I was young. I mean, I'm not that old, so I was really young watching. Like, I'm a Redskins fan since very young. I've got pictures of me as a kid in a Mark Rippon jersey throwing to pretend Art Monk. So I have memories of that, but my memory of stats and – fantasy, and I just don't keep that in mind. So I have spreadsheets, and I tend to go to one of two places depending on what I'm looking at. So I could go to the stats and pull up my spreadsheet, but when I'm thinking through just like a Mount Rushmore, who are the great quarterbacks, to me that's not stats. To me, that's who are the guys that have changed the game, who have really elevated beyond the crowd they've played with, who am I going to remember just for their impact, their presence. And so that's not really, it's not metrics based. That's not a really good way to do it. But for me, I think through who are the guys that I remember. And Brady and Manning right away are just the quarterbacks of this generation. And it's kind of sad because you have Drew Brees and some other great ones that have played with them. But Brady and Manning are so far above and beyond. It's just their rivalry. And particularly Brady, what he has done. I'm not a Pats fan. I never have been. But what they are able to do as a franchise under a salary cap, and just it is something to watch. And so Brady to me stands out. But if I go back further, the ones that I really remember are the guys that led their team to many Super Bowls. And that's QB wins, which for fantasy and for real analysis, I don't care about. But to me, the 49ers guys, the Joe Montana, Steve Young, Troy Aikman, those are the ones that stand out in my memory as, wow, they really were excellent for not just one season, but they really were able to do a lot with their teams, even as pieces moved around them. So those are the guys that my mind kind of centers on and says, these are the ones that I'm going to remember, even years down the road. And it's so weird to talk that way because that's not how I like analyzing football. That's not how I talk about fantasy, but if I'm talking about just the ones that I think have changed the game, that's kind of how I approach it.
How about you, Anthony?
Yeah, I definitely agree with a lot of Josh's points. I think that when we're talking about Mount Rushmore, Mount Rushmore doesn't include like the four most effective, leaders of our country. It has the four people that we, you know, remember the most and had probably the biggest impact, on America. And that's kind of how I think about it with the quarterbacks. Like Josh was saying, like, you know, I want guys who have, obviously you want guys who have put up big numbers. You want people who have won titles, but also just like, what has been their impact on the game? What have they meant to the sport of football? So I mean, Brady, Manning, and Montana, I think are definitely the kinds of people that you're talking about in terms of, you know, all time impact on football. And then I think, you know, past that, there's just a lot of really good names out there. I mean, John Unitas, John Elway, Steve Young. Like, there's just so many guys, Troy Aikman, Bart Starr. There's so many players that I think, fans could gravitate to differently depending on where they're from. But I want people who have had an impact on the sport and are memorable for more than just what they did on the field.
Yeah, I think that it's also important to think about, like, when you're talking about Mount Rushmore, what do those four gentlemen have in common? They were all left-handed. So we got to go with Michael Vick. We got to go with Steve Young. And no, I'm just kidding. They're all presidents. These guys are the Super Bowl winners of, you know, what they did. And to me, Marino's out. I just can't put Marino on my Mount Rushmore. He never won a Super Bowl. Sorry, buddy. Your numbers are great, and I'll find space for you in one of our other Mount Rushmores later. But in terms of, you know, what we're doing with the four, like, I want different types of quarterbacks. I want different eras of quarterbacks. Like, I mean, Teddy Roosevelt is partially on Mount Rushmore because he founded national parks, right? And that's a national park that Mount Rushmore is at. So that was his impact. That was what he did that was great. And he's represented there. I don't know. I do think that Montana, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady are all pretty unassailable. It's what you do with that fourth spot that I think is interesting. And you touched on a guy, Anthony, who I think deserves it. We're just getting into my picks at this point. I think Unitas is that guy for me. And I never watched Unitas play. But, you know, he's kind of, when these discussions come up, he's the first great quarterback. I mean, Bart Starr was the first guy to win a bunch of Super Bowls, but the game was different then. The Packers weren't winning because Bart Starr was, you know, a prolific passer. But Johnny Unitas was that guy, you know, multiple MVPs, multiple Super Bowl MVPs, made the Pro Bowl 10 times, like, changed the game. And you guys have touched on that already. And that's important to me. And even though, you know, again, I'm not a Unitas guy. I'm not a Colts fan. I didn't watch him play. I wasn't alive at the time, but you know, just what he brought to the game, how he changed it for these other guys to come along later, like Montana, like Brady. I think that he's the dude. He's number four for me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's my number four as well. I think that you hit on all the key points. I mean, he's to have played for, you know, football 50 or 60 years ago and have us still talk about you and not have played in an era that was, you know, really heavily driven towards that position, I think just kind of says everything that you need to say about Johnny Unitas.
Yeah, I think just in the way we're talking about it, it's hard to separate the impact on the game from the names we talk about, because I think if it's just the names that are popularly known, you get into more of the names I mentioned, or a Brett Favre, or some guys that really didn't change the game, but our memory as a society, as fans, is just so short-term that we don't remember those guys. And I think looking back to those, the Unitas, the guys that have really changed the game and impacted the way it has taken shape, really are more important. I mean, you think about Mount Rushmore, that maybe it's not a perfect analogy, but it's the men that changed society. We don't really talk about them all, not all of them all the time, but they really had profound impacts in certain ways. And so it's more than just which names are we talking about in 2016.
Yeah, for what it's worth, Favre is kind of my 4B. He would be the guy who was just behind Unitas in terms of the guys that are missing, and I think Elway is not too far behind him. But I would have Favre kind of ranked number 5 in this discussion. Any other thoughts on – I mean, Josh, I don't think we got your full list, if you have one. Who are your four guys?
No, I think you're right. Those first three are the ones – and I think that putting Brady and Manning both there really – speaks to my ignorance of the history of football, or like I said, my memory of it. But I think that Brady, Manning, and Montana are just such clear picks that I would have a hard time going away from that. If I'm picking a fourth, I really, really, like you guys have said, it's a real struggle there. For me personally, I'd put Steve Young there just because as a kid, I gravitated to his way of playing the game. And like my memories of being a young person and watching football are Steve Young rolling around and throwing left-handed and just being different. Like he stood out as being successful and different at the same time and kind of breaking the mold for what I thought a quarterback was, that he really stands out in a kind of a unique way for me. And again, that's ignoring all the historical ones that I just don't have the best knowledge of.
You're giving me goosebumps right now. I love Steve Young. But yeah, I mean, I think that's important too. You're also looking for those guys who are, you know, different guys who stand out in certain ways. And, you know, one of the ways we can try to capture that is by, you know, maybe pushing aside this greatest all time sort of discussion with Montana, Manning, and Brady, and talking about, you know, other Mount Rushmores we could come up with. And the first one I came up with here is a fantasy quarterback Mount Rushmore. And we're kind of applying the same thing, but to fantasy play, to fantasy QBs. And, you know, right there, you just mentioned him, Steve Young. He's got to be on my fantasy QB Mount Rushmore. I think you have to have a Russian guy on there. And if you're choosing between like Young and Culpepper and Vic and Cam Newton, Young was the first guy to really be great doing it. I mean, I guess you could talk about Fran Tarkenton, but like you, that you were talking about with some of the other, you know, more famous old time quarterbacks, is a little before my time. And like you, I grew up watching Steve Young play. I am a 49ers fan. This is a total homer pick, but Young fits the bill. Like Young, I do think Marino deserves to be in that discussion. I mean, if you can't win the, you know, the Super Bowl, you can definitely win a lot of fantasy championships with a guy like Dan Marino in the 70s and 80s. And I think that Peyton Manning has to be on there too. I don't know. It's a little more interesting when you start talking about fantasy quarterbacks. Marino, you know, the early statistical dominance, Steve Young, the kind of breaking the mold, running, winning Super Bowls and putting up stats in different ways. Manning, just the sustained excellence. My fourth guy is Drew Brees, but, you know, we could mix and match a bunch of different guys in here. What do you guys think for your fantasy QB Mount Rushmores?
For me, my four guys, I have some overlap with you, Greg. Manning, Brady, and Brees, I have all three of those guys. I went pretty much all common era just because I feel like the biggest fantasy stats have been put up within the last like 15 or so years. And those guys have all had all-time great seasons. I mean, Brady had the year with the 50 touchdowns. Manning had the year with the 49 touchdowns. And Brees has just been really consistently great for the last decade. So I thought all three of those guys in terms of fantasy were just guys that I had to have. Like I couldn't think of a way around it. I know that some of these earlier era guys probably were also very good, but when you just consider the absurd numbers that these guys put up now, I just couldn't leave them off. I couldn't bring myself to do so. And my fourth guy, I went a little off the wall. I went Michael Vick just because I think Vick has always been a guy that's appealing for fantasy. And he's also had one of those ridiculous seasons. If you remember that first year with, well, I guess technically it was his second year at the Eagles, where he just went off the wall through, you know, he had the 5-touchdown game against Washington. I feel like I'll just never forget that game. And just had like the ultimate season when you consider the rushing production and the passing production. He's kind of like, he's like the reason like I go after all these running quarterbacks now. It's just that like, they have such high floors and, he really showed the ceiling that these players have when everything breaks right.
Yeah, and just the way he played was so electric. Like when he took off and ran, you just felt like you were watching greatness, even if it was so fleeting, as was the case. Yeah, he was awesome that season, and even some other years, like that one season with the Eagles. Like when he was good, he was so good. It's just a real shame that, you know, he couldn't sustain that excellence for, you know, a long time over many different seasons. Josh, who are your fantasy QBs?
Yeah, this as opposed to just straight NFL Mount Rushmore is a lot easier for me since I've been playing fantasy football for a long time now. But guys like Brett Favre, who we talked about before, was just ridiculous in the mid-90s. I think he was the top quarterback for like 3 years in a row. He was in the top 10 basically every year he played, even in his like age 40 season. Dante Culpepper was right there as like a top, I think he was top three, like several years in a row in the early 2000s. He's another one that comes to mind. Obviously, like Anthony said, the 2013 Peyton Manning, the 2007 Tom Brady, those come to mind. Steve Young, who I've already talked about. Even Rich Gannon, who was like a top five option for four straight years. It's a different era now where now we're expecting over 4,000 yards. We're expecting these crazy passing numbers. But if you go back even just to the late 1990s, the early 2000s, the guys who hit those thresholds were just insane. I mean, it was unheard of to be getting these like 4,500 yard seasons. But it was like 2001, 2002, I think, that Rich Gannon had the like 4,500 yard season. It was just crushing things. And so some guys that have kind of been lost in the sands of time have really been had some ridiculous seasons in their day, and it's hard to see that looking back just because they don't have numbers that would stand out today necessarily, but the game has just changed so much over the last decade.
Yeah, it does feel like Favre, who you mentioned kind of early there, is one of those guys who has kind of been lost recently, even though he's still a pretty prominent figure, especially, you know, for folks in the Midwest. But he's one of those guys who's kind of been pushed aside because Manning and Brady have been so great for so long. Favre was that guy, you know, 10, 20 years ago. Like, he started playing in the 90s. He played for multiple teams, was fantasy relevant on multiple teams, you know, and NFL relevant on multiple teams. And that's crazy. He was just a great player. And I think that he definitely deserves a lot of consideration for the fantasy QB Mount Rushmore. He didn't make my list, but I think that he's, yeah, he's got to be in the conversation.
Yeah, I think I have. I just harbor, like, so much, like, late Favre bias. I don't know why. Like, I just...
Is it the sex just, thing?
No, that was, like, his best move over the last, like, few years.
That made me like him more.
Yeah. No, but I just... I don't know. I guess, especially since his prime was kind of over when I was really starting to get into football, like, I was just waiting for this guy to retire. I was like, dude, you got to hang him up. Like, you're just not good anymore. And, I don't know. I think outside of the Favre anniversary of his dad passing game where he just like crushed, I don't really have like a lot of like positive memories of him. So he doesn't like make, he's never like a guy I think of when I think about like these all time lists.
Yeah. He kind of really transitioned to a different sort of player than he was in the like mid and late 90s.
Yeah. He holds a lot of the like negative records too, like most interceptions and all that stuff. That doesn't help. Anyway, let's keep going. I have one more Mount Rushmore I want to talk about, and this is the streaming QB Mount Rushmore. This is where we really need to be for a two-quarterback podcast, and it's interesting to think about what you want from a streaming QB, like how you profile that sort of player. Now, that could be someone that you draft as a, you know, a QB3 or a QB4, and then with the intention of streaming them in from time to time, but it can also be a waiver wire pickup, right? It can be a guy that came in for you over the past or the last like 5 weeks of a season, carried you through the fantasy playoffs and into a championship when, you know, you never thought that would have been possible with a player like that. Who are the streaming QBs on your Mount Rushmores? Josh, why don't you go first on this one?
Yeah, this is I feel like this is so tied to current era if we just stick to straight streaming, because for so long, it was get an elite quarterback. That was like the draft strategy, was running back and quarterback and you're good to go. And streaming, if we define streaming as just kind of shuffle guys, pick a different one every week and then hope you hit on somebody, that's such a new idea. Not that no one was running their roster that way, but
it's a modern concept.
Right. And so people would, like, you'd find good quarterbacks on waivers. That, obviously, that's a thing that happens no matter which era you're in. But I think about, like, Nick Foles coming out of nowhere, Tim Tebow, Terrell Pryor. Like, those are the guys that stand out to me where they don't really have careers that you like them at all, but just at the ends of seasons, particularly, where they come in and just crush for the end of the regular season in fantasy or for the fantasy playoffs. And some guys that are just bad, like that to me is the epitome of a streaming quarterback, a guy that you never play again after that year. But for that 1 year, he just changes the shape your entire league takes. And so those are the three names that really stand out to me are like Foles, Pryor, and Tebow.
Do you have a number four guy?
I don't. I spent a while trying to think about it, and I don't. It's so tied to the present era for me. I got to give Sal and others props for Tyrod Taylor last year. I was not a big fan. He was drafted late. I should have been on him, but I didn't see it. So maybe he qualified there, but he's kind of a weak pick. So no, I really have three I feel good about.
How about you, Anthony?
Yeah, for me, I think in addition to Josh's comment about it being kind of like a modern thing, I think it's also really tied to personal experience. Like I know
yes.
The four guys that I picked are four guys that I've won with. Like four guys. Well, I don't think I won with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's on my list. But the other three, I mean, Tebow, I remember starting Tebow in a title game and being like, I don't know what this guy's going to do. You know, like he could do nothing. But you just trust the upside in the system. And that's, I guess, the definition of a streaming QB. You know, so Tebow's on my list as well. Also Kyle Orton. The year with Josh McDaniels was just, it was amazing. Like
was
I remember like almost trading Kyle Orton during the season because I was like, how's this guy going to keep it up? And I was like, no, I'm going to keep him. I'm going to hold on to Kyle Orton. And, he just crushed. Like, he was unbelievable. And the ultimate, like, hashtag never forget streaming QB for me is Tyler Thigpen. That, I think it was 2008 when he was playing with Chan Gailey, and I'm 100% Team Chan. Just, you know, was putting up rushing numbers every week, was putting up good enough passing statistics where he was fantasy relevant. And I, again, I started him in the playoffs. Like, it was just a wild ride, and it was a lot of fun. And I'll just kind of never forget that.
Yeah, those personal experiences, the ones where you did stream a guy and it worked out for you, those are the ones that hit closest to home, and that's where mine come from as well. Kirk Cousins is on my list from those early years for him when he was unseating or replacing an injured RG3. He carried me to a championship in one of those years. I have Fitzpatrick on my list as well. That crazy Nick Foles Eagles season, he makes my list. And then my fourth guy is one who kind of fits the mold of what I was talking about earlier with someone who you would draft, but, you know, not as a QB2, not as a QB1, and that's Alex Smith. He's just a guy who every year perennially is just not valued very highly, and for good reason. Like, he doesn't have a whole lot of upside, but he's so usable that you can just always find time to use him some weeks of the fantasy season, and I think that's pretty important. Josh McCown was my honorable mention there, but, you know, all the guys you mentioned are great choices as well. Let's move on now to our QB spotlight. And here's another guy who, you know, has had some streaming appeal in the past, and we noted him at the top of the episode. We're talking about the Geno Smith experience. And I know that you guys both have some pretty strong feelings about Geno. I'm curious what you think about him going forward. We know that Fitzpatrick is a free agent. He has not signed as of this recording, to my knowledge. I haven't checked Twitter in, you know, an hour. So anything could happen. But what do you guys expect from Geno in 2016 and beyond? Anthony, you want to start?
Yeah, I think that a lot of it obviously is going to depend on what happens with Fitzpatrick. If he comes back, I have to assume it's for a decent amount of money. So it might take an injury to him, at least in year one, for us to see Geno. But it's looking right now, at least to me, that I think the Jets are going to let Fitzpatrick walk. And for me, I'm huge on Geno. I'm like, I think that in this offense with Chan Gailey, that Geno could absolutely be startable. I don't know if I'm ready to say every week startable, but, you know, we look at what a guy like Fitzpatrick has been able to do, and he's basically only been good with Chan Gailey, you know, a seventh round pick. Geno Smith was a second round pick. He was incredibly successful at West Virginia. He has tools. I would love to see him start for this team, and I think that if he does that, he's going to be probably one of the best QB values out there, because I think there's just a lot of, like, Geno sucks stigma out there, and I don't even know if that's really true. This is a guy that has just repeatedly dominated in, and I'm using the word dominated in a serious manner, like, he's dominated games that the Jets have won. If you look at his career, he's averaging over 23.5 fantasy points in games that the Jets win. That's a huge total. That's QB1. That's like strong QB1 numbers. And while the other end of that is really bad, I mean, he's averaging 10 points in Jet losses. That kind of gives Smith a little bit of predictability. So even if we're talking about, like you were saying, him as a streamer, you know, if the Jets, you know, favored by Vegas to win a game, that's a good week probably to stream Geno. And if they're not, then you probably bench him. I think that's kind of how you play him.
Well, and there are narratives, too, that can back up why he was so bad in the limited action that he did have. Like, their weapons for so long were so terrible. That's a big takeaway for me, is that when you're throwing to, you know, Stephen Hill and company, that's a lot different than throwing to Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. But anyway, Josh, what do you think about Geno? Where do you stand? Do you agree with Anthony that he could be a value, that he should be going higher or being perceived as a better player than he is?
Yeah, I have him stashed on far too many of my dynasty teams. But your point is a really good one, Greg, that it's such an unfair stigma to put on him, to compare him to last year's Ryan Fitzpatrick, who Fitzpatrick was throwing to Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. And if you pull up the leading targets on the 2013 Jets, it's Jeremy Curley, David Nelson, and Stephen Hill. It's just, it's night and day who they're throwing to. And they're not similar quarterbacks. They're not doing similar things. Fitzpatrick has obvious advantages over Geno, but the ability is there. I think that like Anthony said, and like we all know, that by the time this podcast goes live, it could be that we know where Fitzpatrick has landed. But that determines so much of Geno's short-term value that I agree with Anthony that Geno isn't going to be in a true quarterback battle if Fitzpatrick comes back to the Jets this season. So that kind of limits the short-term value, limits the redraft value for sure. But I think Geno is interesting. That draft capital, that second-round draft pick that Anthony mentioned, I think that he's shown – I mean, he was in a Rex Ryan offense throwing to really bad weapons and still had great, great performances in those victories. He was kind of a roller coaster of highs and lows, but there's potential there. And I do think he is too quickly discarded as trash for some really poor reasons. And so with just the ultra-cheap cost to acquire him, he is a guy that I have stashed on a lot of dynasty leagues because I play in – leagues that tend to have deeper rosters and they're all two quarterback or super flex. So he's a fourth or fifth quarterback for me. I'm not at the point that I can say, oh yeah, he should be your QB3, particularly since he doesn't have a starting job as we're recording this. But he's a guy I'm absolutely interested in moving forward. And as a long shot, this is not me saying, oh good, go get him, he'll be a starter. But he's so cheap and the upside is there that he's the type of quarterback I like acquiring.
Yeah, that roller coaster ride you're talking about where he's up one week, he's down week, that's not uncommon for young quarterbacks either. That's something that you'll see a lot of the time with these guys who are learning to play in the NFL. And I don't know if we can necessarily punish him in 2016 for those sorts of problems that he was having in 2014, 2013. I also think it's interesting that when he was starting, when he was getting that opportunity, the Jets defense was pretty good as well. So he didn't have to do quite as much to win games, you know? And I think that that can get into a player's head to some extent, or just the scheme itself can affect how a player is used. Like maybe they weren't taking advantage of Geno's full skill set and capabilities as a player. It'll be interesting to see if Fitzpatrick does sign somewhere else, and now that Rex Ryan is gone, how he would be used relative to someone like Fitzpatrick this past season. We've talked a lot about the kind of pro Geno, like why we like Geno. Let's play devil's advocate for a moment here, because it sounds like we're all kind of on board with him being a little underrated. What are the arguments against Geno? What worries you about him, aside from just the job security stuff with Fitzpatrick? Josh?
Yeah, so the job security is something not lightly passed over, but also putting that aside, I mean, there is the internal concern over just the way that he lost the starting job last season, of getting punched in the face and really no one coming to his defense and some difficulty dealing with the team. I mean, all of that stuff that we can't see gives you some pause as far as, is he going to be able to see the field? Is he going to be able to really have the confidence of his team? That's a concern. There's a concern over his inaccuracy. Other than last year where he only played one game, but in his two real seasons, 2013 and 2014, he never hit 60% as a completion rate, which Blake Bortles also hasn't done, so that's not a death nail. But he also has a bad touchdown to interception ratio. It was very dreadful, a negative ratio in his first season, and then it was even in his second season. So he has not shown a gigantic leap in his passing ability like we would like to see. We saw both Carr and Bortles really take a next step and show that in their sophomore season with a full off season, they could make a leap and really make a difference. And we didn't see that out of Geno. So there's some room to question whether he's going to be able to adjust to the NFL game. And granted that it is also important to note that he added Eric Decker in that second season. So he even had a better weapon around than he did before. And so that's some concern. And then just the roller coaster is very unpredictable. Sure, he had some big weeks, but are those the fluke weeks? Is he maybe just a bad quarterback that happened to be playing from behind and get some fantasy points but wouldn't have longevity? So those are some of the arguments against him that I do not think we have definitive answers to. A lot of my argument for him is tied to the cost, because I do think there's a lot of unknown, and that is the risk.
Anthony, what do you think?
Oh gosh, I mean, Josh, I took so many good points.
Come on, Josh, leave some for the guest.
No,
this is bad host.
I, I love it. I love it because it means I don't have to say many bad things about Geno because I love him too much. But the one thing that definitely is possible, I mean, it's really possible that this is just all Geno is and that there's no development left to be had. Like you mentioned, Josh, some of these younger quarterbacks like Carr and Bortles have already taken really big steps forward in year two. And granted, we didn't get to see year three from Geno, but it definitely creeps in my mind as a possibility that Geno's just never going to get any better. And, you know, the guy he was in his final year at West Virginia, the guy that he was as a rookie and a sophomore, like that might just be who Geno Smith is. And as much as we like him for fantasy and as much as I think he can pay off for fantasy, it's really possible that he just never is able to, have a coaching staff trust him enough to get consistent fantasy value out of him.
Yeah, I think the point about just some of the red flags that he does have is a really good one. The fact that he has been inaccurate, that is an obvious pitfall of many quarterbacks, and guys who can't be accurate often have problems sustaining careers in the NFL. That's probably the biggest red flag for me with Geno. The intangible stuff, getting punched in the face with no one coming to his aid, like that's also an issue. We talked earlier when we were going over your armchair scouting reports, Anthony, how you know, those intangibles do matter, and they matter a lot, especially for quarterbacks. So, yeah, those are probably the two big ones for me, and you guys have touched on those. So let's move on. I want to talk a little bit more about Geno as a rusher. We've seen him be pretty mobile in the past, pick up some rushing yards, make plays from out of the pocket. What sort of rushing upside does he have? Is that something that you would be gambling towards, or do you see that more as like a safety net for to make up for his inaccuracy as a passer?
So what I look at is that in his two, what I'll call full seasons, in 2014, he only started 13 games, but it's close to a full season. So in both of those seasons, he averaged about four and a half rush attempts per game and was averaging his rookie season, he was averaging 22 rushing yards a game and then 17 in his second season. He had a really high rushing touchdown total. He had 6 in his rookie season, then only 1 in the second season. So that's a lot of stats thrown out there, which is bad in audio form. But to say that I don't think it is a big upside with him, at least in the offense he was in, and it's very different now. But it seems to me like he has that potential, but he is not this crazy, you throw him out there because you think he's going to be Michael Vick. I don't see that in his game. I think if he's going to be successful, it's because he has really progressed as a passer and can take advantage of that Changeli offense that really uses the good receiving options he has. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't view him as this like crazy upside rusher. To me, it's more just adds a few points. Even if he has a bad passing game, maybe he'll get 3 points out of his rushing game, 4 points, or maybe he'll throw in a touchdown every now and then. And so to me, it just kind of helps his floor a little more. But that to me is kind of something I hold with a loose hand. He was playing in a very different system than he would be if he played this year.
So it would remind you more of someone like Ryan Tannehill from 2014 or something like that, where he's picking up some chunks of yards when he can, but it's not something that's a huge part of his game.
I think that's fair, that I would envision if he was playing right now in the Changeli system, that it's not like they go to this crazy read option, that they really start taking advantage of it in a regular way. But I think that's a pretty fair comp is what I would see.
Anthony, you got any thoughts on Geno's rushing ability?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has real tangible rushing upside. Again, like you were saying, Josh, I don't know if it's necessarily the reason that I draft him, but I don't think that it's crazy. I don't think it would surprise me at all to see Geno Smith run for like 500 yards and, luck into a ton of touchdowns. Like I think 509 on the ground as like an absolute ceiling is definitely feasible when you consider what Gailey has been able to do with some of these other guys. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tyler Thigpen were pretty consistent threats on the ground under Gailey. And Fitzpatrick, I think, had like 270 yards rushing this year. And that's in his 12th season. And he's probably never at any point in his career been the kind of athlete that Geno Smith is now. So I think even if he got the same opportunities in the same situations, he would rush for more yards and probably for more touchdowns. So I think that Smith is probably someone that I would like safely pencil in at like 300 or 350 yards rushing, but I definitely could see a 500 yard rushing season. And as we've seen from quarterbacks over the years, rushing touchdowns are pretty variant year to year for quarterbacks. So if he, you know, you happen to get him in the right year, he could really make a pretty big impact on the ground.
Yeah, the yardage definitely seems like it'll be there if he does have a full-time gig. I'm not sure how consistent the rushing touchdowns will be. One, because like you said, they tend to vary from season to season, but also just because their red zone options are so good. Like they have Brandon Marshall, they have Eric Decker, they have Jason Morrow, hopefully, who will come along, you know, one of these days. Who knows for real, for sure. But that is something I don't know if I'd pencil him in for more than, say, you know, 3 to 4 rushing touchdowns. But you're right, he could have more than that, and that's part of his appeal. Do you guys have anything else on Geno before we move on? We're running a little long here. I want to keep things moving.
No, that's good.
Yeah, my only other comment is that Josh having Geno as a QB 4 or 5 in a deep league is pure sex.
That's why I do it.
With that, we're going to move into our listener and reader questions here. We put out the bat signal on Twitter asking for your 2QB and Superflex questions. We got a few here. The first is one from Joe at JDeck89, and he has a long one, so bear with me here. It's an auction league, Superflex, $1,000 salary cap. He has Luck, Mariota, and Carr. He can extend Carr for one of these resulting contracts: 2 years at $73, 3 years for $80, or 4 years for $86. He's asking, how long would you extend Carr with Luck's contract expiring after this year? He's already going to extend Mariota for 4 years. Let's start there. This is a long question. Let's take it one piece at a time.
Yeah, I have a hard time anytime just addressing auction salary cap questions, but he did a good job of putting like all the relevant facts in there, kind of your total salary cap, the salaries, what his other options look like at the position. So there's a lot more factors there. If I was going to boil it down just because it makes for better radio content, his question essentially is, how long should he guarantee Carr's contract for? Because the dollar value doesn't change in any significant way between his questions. I mean, it's 1% of his total salary cap difference between 2-year contract and 4-year contract. So the dollars don't really change in a significant way. I like Carr. I liked him coming into the draft before we knew where he was going. I still liked him, although I was more cautious about it after his really bad rookie season. I think that he is a guy that I do like. I think he's reliable. My only hesitation would be here that you've got Luck, Mariota, and Carr, really strong options. Do you really need 3 of them? But given the information I have, it doesn't look like he's capped on the number of years he has players. It's just a dollar cap. And since I don't see a penalty in his question, I'd take Carr for 4 years myself. I think he's so young. He does look to have a consistent job. He has enough talent to stay in the NFL. If it really is just dollars, I don't think that a 1% difference between 2 years and 4 years is enough that I would balk. I think I'd go for the full 4-year contract.
Anthony, you got any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we just push it all in here with Carr. He says that Luck's contract is expiring. I'm assuming that that's a situation he can't extend. Otherwise, maybe I wouldn't look to commit so much money to Carr and Mariota, you know, with Luck. But yeah, I mean, Carr is really young. He's been really productive. I think that offense is probably only going to get better. So why not go for the 4 years? It's only about 8% of your total cap, which I think is pretty good for a guy who can be, if not a really good QB1, like, you know, towards the back end or you know, at least a solid QB2.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to go into any more detail. You guys have kind of hit all the key points. It's not a big enough dollar difference. His second part of the question here is a trade question. He says he also has the opportunity to trade Carr and another player for Roethlisberger, who's on a 2-year $90 contract. He says, what type of player, you know, RB1, RB2, wide receiver 1, wide receiver 2, would you add to Carr to make that trade? And that's a good one, because you can keep Carr for longer than Roethlisberger. I'm assuming, again, like Josh did, that if you, once these guys are at the end of their contract, they go back into the player pool no matter what. I could be wrong there, but I don't know. Like, does Roethlisberger have that much more appeal than Carr? Like, Roethlisberger at 2 years versus Carr at 4 years? Because, again, the dollar amounts are about the same. I think I might rather have Carr just for the longevity, But if you are looking to make this sort of deal, I don't know. I'm it's hard to envision what sort of running back or wide receiver, you know, level of player I want to add to that deal. Anthony, what do you think?
Well, I've played a lot of auction, especially 2QB auction, and it really is going to depend on the dollar amounts associated with these players. I mean, if I can give up a player that I think can get the trade done, but maybe I'm overpaying for, I would consider doing that. If I'm in kind of like a win now position and I can give up a depth piece, I would consider that, but I'm not really looking to move kind of to your point, Greg. I'm not going to look to move a player that I have a long-term investment in with Carr, who I could also invest in long-term for kind of a quick fix in Roethlisberger's, because even if Roethlisberger's like a top five or six quarterback, it's not going to be a tremendous upgrade over someone like Carr.
Yeah, it's a great point, the one you made about what you're playing for. If you're playing to win now, I can understand making the move on Roethlisberger. You've only got Luck for one more year. You're extending Mariota. Carr, while, you know, is a solid investment for the next 4 years, doesn't quite have the upside of Roethlisberger and that Pittsburgh Steelers offense. I agree that if you're giving up someone who, you know, might be more of a developmental player for your you know, keeper squad, that's a deal I would think about making. But yeah, if you're giving up a piece that would also help you win right now, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. What do you think, Josh?
No, I think you guys have covered it well. It's a long question. There's a lot of moving pieces, but rather than take up more time, I think you guys have kind of hit the nail on the head with the questions I'd be asking him as follow-ups.
Okay, well, let's move on to our next question. This one comes from Chris Chung at FF Dynasty 101. He says, when going late quarterback, who are the best pair this year? So I'm assuming he's asking, which two QBs do you want to lock up as your QB1 and QB2 if you're going to wait a little while? Josh, you want to start on this one?
Yeah, it's interesting an interesting question, because if you're waiting, you really want to find, to me at least, I still want to find reliable guys if I'm waiting. I don't want to be playing the streaming game. This is just my personal philosophy. I don't want to be playing the streaming game with both slots. I'd like to have a reliable guy, at least one of them. So to me, I tend to gravitate towards the guys I've mentioned already, Andy Dalton, Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning, Tony Romo. Those guys are all going fairly late in a lot of drafts, but you know what you're getting. You're getting potential QB1 upside, but at least very high QB2 production, and I think you can get them pretty cheap. So I'd be starting there and then really looking for the upside guys after that. But those are where I would start from, because if I can get a reliable piece, I want to go risky. And so that's not specific pair, but I'd go that way and then look at someone with more of the risk and upside later. If that's Tyrod, if that's Kirk Cousins, that's the sort of style I'd be looking to build with if I was waiting.
I think this question is somewhat fundamentally flawed, if only because what you're really trying to do when you go late round quarterback is to just pick up value. It doesn't really matter the specific players. You're not waiting because you think that player X and player Y are going to be available in the sixth and seventh round. You're waiting because there are so many good quarterbacks that you'll take any of them because they're all pretty close in value, you know, like Dalton, like Rivers, like Eli, like Romo. And I don't know, like if you're asking me which two I hope to get, then it's hard to say. It's just I want certain guys to slide to certain spots. Like if we go back and look at the mock draft that I wrote up, the fact that you, Josh, got Carson Palmer in the fifth round, like that screams late round quarterback to me. He was going much later last year, of course, but at the same time, like for the season he just had, getting a player like that in the fifth round is pretty appealing, but that's not really late round QB. That's just value, right? That's just a guy going a little bit lower than you feel like he should. And I think that's my general approach to this. But I don't think it's correct to try and pinpoint precise players, for this sort of strategy. Anthony, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. And I think that what we're talking about is just the importance of tiers. I mean, I don't think I would have trouble starting my late QB squad with any of those guys that Josh was talking about, you know, Rivers, Dalton, Eli Manning, even Matt Ryan, who I think is kind of now maybe a little undervalued after being super overvalued for a couple of years. Like, get the guy that you know is at least going to start 16 games if he's healthy. And then with that QB2 slot, go with a guy that is a little more risky, like a Tyrod Taylor or Matthew Stafford. Joe Flacco. Like, you know, then you can kind of go with that, maybe have like that secondary tier of guys that have upside, but also have a lower floor.
Yeah, good points. All right, next question is from at PD Aquaviva. He or she asks, outside the first tier for 2QB Dynasty, who can I look to build around? He doesn't want to chase Luck and those other top guys. I'm not really a huge Dynasty guy, so I'm going to leave this to you two. What types of player or what specific players are you looking to build around in Dynasty if you're not going for those elite guys?
Marcus Mariota, and then I'm probably going to try to get some Marcus Mariota. This is a guy I have like tried to acquire in every Dynasty league since last year. I really believe in his talent. I think that his rookie season was about what we hoped to expect and was pretty incredible. I know he missed time with injury. That's, I guess, a concern, but the combination of the arm, the running ability. I mean, he was so much of a better passer last year than I ever thought he could be.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, so it's like when you think about that and the fact that he's probably still worth less than Winston on the free agent on the trade block, and you know, just in terms of pure value in like a startup, I'm definitely looking to go after Mariota and build around him. I mean, his career is just getting started, and he could easily be within the next year or two one of those top five or six guys, and he's going to obviously grow in value to get there.
Who are your guys, Josh?
Dynasty is different than redraft. Like you were saying earlier, Greg, that redraft, well, you just kind of wait because the position is so deep that you know you're going to find guys. Once you're outside of Dynasty's elite guys, there's a lot of question marks around everyone. And so I don't really see a lot. Like, I'm a Mariota fan, probably not to the same degree as Anthony, but I still like him. But I would tend to, if I don't get one of the top four, I have a tier of four at the high end of quarterback. If I don't get one of them, I don't know that I'm building around the quarterback position. I think instead I'm going to be much more open to the older guys, to the Breeze, Rivers, Brady, Palmer, get some of them, get them going, and also be bringing in some of the younger, more iffy guys and have a stable of three kind of young guys that may or may not hit. Bring in some of the rookies, bring in that type. But if you want to nail down a specific name and someone you want to stick with, I think that Derek Carr is probably on that list for me because he's young. I do think he has a very locked-in job, and I think you can get him cheaper than those elite guys by quite a fair bit. I mean, he's going well below Winston and Mariota and most two quarterback startups. So Carr to me is a guy that if you want to spend a little less, he's reliable enough that I think you can kind of start around him.
Yeah, I think trying to identify the guys who are relatively young, but maybe a little undervalued now. Anthony talked about Matt Ryan earlier. I think that he's a good candidate for this, where he's a guy whose value has never been lower, so you can get him at a bit of a discount. But he's still young enough that if you draft him, you're going to have him for quite a few years. I think that Andy Dalton fits that bill as well. But I like your point about maybe trying to get some of the older guys early and then backing those up with the riskier young players, like basically trying to find the next Derek Carr, whoever that might be. That might be Paxton Lynch. That might be Dak Prescott, like Anthony was talking about earlier. There are a lot of different avenues you can take, but you do need to balance risk with a safer floor in some cases. Let's keep going here. Our next question is from Daniel Lindsay, and he asks, which two do you like better going into 2016? Of Cousins, Bortles, and Carr, would you try to add a QB if you had all three in a 12-teamer?
I would not. I am not sold on those three as just guaranteed locks, but if you have three in a 12-team league, I think you're in pretty strong shape. I wouldn't be looking to add a fourth off of that. I am very down on Bortles for his price, but if you already have him on the roster, I think that's great. You can kind of sit it out, see if he does come back to form. And between Cousins, Bortles, and Carr, I think you have pretty good chance at getting one reliable guy and then kind of being able to play the other two back and forth is kind of a worst case scenario. So I think that's a pretty solid situation. Who knows what the rest of his team looks like, but if you're just looking at the quarterback position, I would feel pretty okay with that.
Anthony?
Yeah, I think that's just super solid. You got the three young guys there. I think if I had to pick two, if you specifically need two guys, I'm probably going with Bortles and Carr. just because Carr is probably, to me, the safest of the three. Bortles had a really great year last year, but I think even if he regresses a bunch, he's probably still going to be better than Cousins. Cousins would probably be my pick out of those three guys to kind of come way back to earth next season, just because he should be playing a little bit of a tougher schedule. His top target is pretty injury prone in Jordan Reed. He's still, to me, kind of Kirk Cousins. Like, I'm still not really, you know, 100% sold on Kirk Cousins as a real NFL QB.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you both said. So let's keep going. Next up is from at Mo Reese. He asks, how has free agency impacted Phillip Rivers? And to be a little bit more specific about this, the Chargers just signed Travis Benjamin and Ladarius Green left. Antonio Gates has re-signed with the Chargers. So we kind of know more about who their weapons are going to be there in San Diego. Anthony, what do you think about Phil Rivers? Do you think that this news is all good for him? Do you think does this move the needle for you at all?
It honestly probably doesn't move it for me at all, but if it does, it's probably at least a little bit positive. Benjamin showed that he was a pretty good deep threat last year for Cleveland, and I think that San Diego has really been struggling to find a guy to consistently fill that role. Malcolm Floyd has been in and out of lineup now, obviously he's retired. And I think that that's a role on this offense that's pretty important. So if he can have any kind of consistency for them, even if it doesn't show up in Benjamin's numbers specifically, I think it could, just kind of take the top off the defense a little bit and open everything up for Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen, Antonio Gates underneath.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that Benjamin does give them a little bit more of a deep threat game. I think that Rivers definitely goes up a little bit. I just don't know how much he goes up relative to the other quarterbacks that he's kind of behind in my rankings. But it is positive news, and it makes me feel better about drafting him because some of those question marks have been answered. Josh, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. It doesn't really move the needle for me. Ladarius Green leaving, who cares? Like, if he's good or if he's bad, he wasn't great for the Chargers. So it doesn't really change Rivers for me, and adding Benjamin should be interesting, but I've written about it. I was already high on Rivers. I think for his price, you like him. I do not think that the addition of a fast guy really changes who he is. I think Rivers kind of is who he is, and that's a good value, but this free agency season hasn't really changed a lot for me.
All right, we got one more question that didn't make it onto the show notes because it came in while we were recording. This is from Joe Woodall at the Viton Python. He asks, what do you think about trading Brock Osweiler, Ryan Matthews, 2016 rookie picks 20 and 22 for Derek Carr in my 2QB Dynasty League? That sounds like a lot to give up for Derek Carr. I don't know about you guys. You want me to run that back for you?
Yeah, please.
I'll run it back. It's Osweiler, Ryan Matthews, and rookie picks 20 and 22 this year for Derek Carr. That's steep.
I probably do it, honestly.
Really?
I like Carr. Maybe I like Carr too much, but Osweiler is a big risk and an unknown. Carr is not. Ryan Matthews is fine. And picks 20 to 22 are really lottery tickets. The odds there, sure, you may do well, but they are such risks that this seems like a lot of just pieces for, like I said, a quarterback that I think you can really lock onto your roster and say, I have a guy. And so if he does not have two established quarterbacks already, I probably make this move and accept it, assuming I'm getting Carr.
What do you think, Anthony?
I think I agree. I mean, honestly, I'm pushing back and saying Ryan Matthews is a starting running back right now for the Eagles. I'm not giving you the picks.
That's where my mind's at.
But assuming that like that's like a no-budge situation, it is a little steep, but I just think Osweiler is not that good. Like, I think over the next 4 years or so, Carr is going to put up a lot more consistent production. And to be honest, I think Ryan Matthews might be a committee back within the next couple of months anyway, whether it be Philly bringing somebody else in or trading him to somewhere else who's going to use him and who knows how. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to talk that price down, but if I can't get there, I think I'm still doing it.
Yeah, maybe this kind of goes to show that either one, I believe in Brock Osweiler a little more than both of you guys, or two, that I'm just such a quarterback bigamist that I like the difference between Brock Osweiler and Derek Carr in a 2QB league. While it is significant, it will be significant in my rankings. Like, just the fact that I have a guy who's going to be starting, and oh, by the way, that guy throws to DeAndre Hopkins, like, that's good enough for me that I don't want to give up Ryan Matthews and two other picks, even if those two other picks are, as you said, kind of lottery tickets. But I don't know. I'm a little more hesitant, and I agree with Anthony that you should definitely push back and see if you can give up less to get Derek Carr, because that seems like too much to me. But you two are both on it, so, and again, you guys both have more experience in dynasty formats than I do, so maybe it is a good deal. Take that for what you will, Joe. That's it for the listener questions here. Let's wrap things up. We've been going for a really long time. I want to thank you, Anthony, for joining us here. It's been awesome having you on. It's always great to have a fresh set of opinions. Why don't you remind the listeners how they can find you on social media and where they can find your work?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Amixta, and you can see all my work over at rotoviz.com, fantasyinsiders.com, and of course, 2QBs.
And Josh, give us your contact info as always.
Yeah, man, I'm at Lake2QBs on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way to reach me. I'm pretty active on there and respond to questions. And then I'm writing for rotoviz.com as well and 2QBs.com, and then in season doing some stuff over at 444.
Yep, and you can find me at Greg Sauce on Twitter. You can find my work at 2QBs, and I'm doing a lot of baseball stuff right now, so I won't talk about that. This is a football podcast, but be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done so already. We're on iTunes, Stitcher. We have an RSS feed. All those subscriptions are good news for us. If you can rate us, leave a review, that would be great. Otherwise, yeah, come check out our work at 2QBs.com. Follow us at 2QBs on Twitter and Instagram. You can always send us longer form questions by email at 2QBs@gmail.com. We have a Facebook page as well. If that's your bag, come check us out there. Otherwise, thank you all very much for listening. Have a great day, and we'll catch you next time here on the 2QB Experience. We're out.